to the Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
We're back at 8:08 a.m. in the morning. Every now and then a little technical difficulty. Hey, man, O.T., don't touch stuff. Just sit down. Run your mouth, right? Your mouth. Well, mouth for you proper people. M-O-U-T-H. We want to thank with WBNRB, Do Warren Bell and Roe Brown News and Sports. We want to thank Gina Marie, man, entrepreneur, for trying to help us figure out this whole Grigri versus Voodoo, its cultural and economic importance. And we also always want to thank our next guest, man, Mr. 504, making New Orleans.
Think 504.
No one does it better than Jeff Thomas. Interesting conversation about the importance of cultural travel and how that industry is booming now. You know, we've talked about it in a few segments here on the show. Some of the largest travel expected in the world is cultural and ethnic base.
Yeah, absolutely.
Multi-billion dollar industry.
I got static in my headphone, but let me just say this to you. The last time I was here, you remember my word of the day? It was what? Voodoo.
Yeah.
You remember that?
That man. That.
And then you have Gina here today talking about that. That to me was an amazing thing. And, you know, voodoo, like I said then, was, or Grigri, as she says, it was a religion of freedom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that it has been captured. What was the word you just used? How they culturally take away what is ours.
Right. They change the cultural narrative.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So now when you hear voodoo, people think, oh, man, bones, and it's a devil religion,
right,
you know.
Right,
it was the religion of freedom. It was the religion of Toussaint Louverture. It was the religion of the freedom fighters of the time. And, you know, I just think people need to get a little more information about it, and I appreciated what she brought to the table.
Well, Jeff Thomas, you know, you and I, Mr. Think 504, well, and I reference you a lot on the show, so many important issues that you've been dealing with. But we're going to start off with the man. Is Anthony Davis, you're talking about him. Look, Harden may have locked up the MVP because of what Houston has done and the fact that he's guaranteed 13, 15 free throws every game.
Right.
He'd just be averaging 19 points a game if it wasn't for free throws, so many free throws.
Right.
But Anthony Davis is definitely playing like an MVP.
Yeah, you know, that to me is the reason that the Pelicans are now relevant in the NBA and the Western Conference. I mean, his transformation from a guy who always had tremendous talent. And you
if you looked at him the wrong way, he was hurt, though.
Yeah, that, and also, you know, from quarter one to quarter to midway through the fourth quarter, he was dominant.
He'd get all his points in the first three quarters.
But when the game was on the line, he shrunk like a little 5'3" guy who was afraid to play basketball.
Now
he takes over the game. He is not afraid to take the big shot, and he makes it. And he's dominant when you know it's critical. You know, big time players make big time plays at big time moments.
Extremely gifted young man. It looks like, but it also looks like many of the other players.
Yeah, Drew Holiday stepped up.
Drew got Mr. Bipolar.
Yeah, I tell you right, where'd that come from? But I'm happy to see it. So right, I mean, if people aren't basketball fans, I mean, even if they aren't, this is an exciting race. I mean, the Pelicans can go from fourth place to out of the playoffs.
I've enjoyed going to the games. We actually, our fan base needs to get behind these young men. Indiana was a great team. To look at the audience yesterday,
That should have been a packed house. Yeah, you're right. It wasn't part of the regular schedule. You remember that game was, you know, they played three games in a row, and because that game was the game that got rained out, so to speak, when the stadium leaked, and so they had to fit that one in. And I guess, you know, it's outside of the normal rhythm of fans going to games, which is why the crowd was so sparse.
Well, you know, there's another topic. NPR, and I have a copy of the study that was done about black men that basically shows that black men, even if you think you have social and economic advantages, in reality, you're no better off than those who come. So for those of us who think we're not like them.
Sure, right. We're above the
curve. And then the study shows that whether it's incarceration, whether it's drugs, whether it's economic opportunity, whether it's mental health or stress, that was a real bleak, real picture painted. But it's also something that we knew.
Right. Well, here's the thing.
And talk about what the study.
What the study found is that no matter what socioeconomic strata you fall in. You could be the poorest of the poor or the richest of the rich in the black community. You have 99% of white men are going to do better than you.
No matter how rich you think you are.
Well, here's the thing that was shocking. Children of rich white men who are children of wealthy families tend to retain their wealth.
Right.
Black men, not children, black men, and I should have said they're right, white men who are in wealthy families tend to retain their wealth.
And grow it.
Black men who are children of wealthy black families tend to lose it. There's a downward spiral. Downward mobility is what happens to black men.
Very powerful point of the study.
It's incredible.
Almost like it's a conspiracy in the society that if you have some wealth, that you're targeted. Mm-hmm. And so
If you're a woman, then the trends are the opposite. In fact, women tend to remain consistent. White women in families that are wealthy tend to remain wealthy. Black women in families that are wealthy tend to remain wealthy. White women in families that are middle income tend to remain middle income. The track of white women and black women based upon their economic conditions remains consistent. It is black men who have this one stigma attached to them, and it's nothing other than race. When you peel away all of the other factors, it boils down to black men are on a downward spiral in life, in American life.
What was interesting about the study was the sections that talk about the advantages that black women have, even over black men.
I remember when I was a young guy in college and my friends and I would sit around.
Many try to dispel that now, but this study basically doubles down on that. It says no.
Right. We'd have these discussions and we'd be talking about the fact that, the way society is structured, in order to break up and manipulate the black family, black women are given opportunities and black men are denied opportunities. Well, this study seems to make the point that is accurate, in fact. And so the fact is, though, black women have been viewed as less threatening and more acceptable. And, of course, white men have had a history of being familiar, as Congressman Richmond said, being familiar with black women. And so the fact is that, black women are more acceptable in society. Black men are outcasts. And even to this day, this is still true. And, to break up with the family dynamic is such that you give the black woman who is making more money than the black man, and the family dynamic is broken up.
Then Jeff Thomas, for many who deal with this, it's something that we can see, right? It's something that we know, something we've felt in our community for a long time. Then how do you change that trajectory? Because
that's why my book's coming out. Let me tell you, I understand completely,
right.
And I don't want to give away the thesis of the point of the book, but I'll say this. I'll say that we need to change some things. That the fact is that there is a way that the change resides within us. Mm-hmm. The change resides in us feeling good about ourselves, black men. And if we do business with one another, if we are able to not kill each other but to help each other, we can overcome this. Let me tell you, the great thing about American society is that there are economies, and there are ways to make money in America outside of mainstream economy. If we were able to do business with one another, we would have one of the largest economies in the world. And so that is a key.
Explain that, what you mean is that if we were able to do business with each other.
Well, here's the thing. Part of the problem, I hate it when I hear black people say, man, I try to do business with my people, but you know what happens. And so
one exception becomes the rule.
Right. Well, we're quick to castigate.
One size fits all.
Right. We're quick to say, one bad episode, we cast out the whole lot. Whereas when you have a bad experience with a white business, they had a bad day, and you complain to the manager, but you go back. I think that because we have this self-hatred built into us, we talked about this a long time ago, but part of the narrative bias in America is that black people are bad, black men in particular are bad, black men in particular are unpredictable and need to be regulated. And
there's a line in Flint Mitchell's show we just did, The Other Black History, mm-hmm. that deals with what you just said. And in one of the monologues that I did in explaining linguistic racism, mm-hmm. One of the comments that I made was, the environment in which linguistic racism, cultural nativism is that white is good or not so bad. Black is bad or not so good.
That's right. That's right. And because of that, because we, this is built into us. I mean, this is, I made this point on this show and in my writings oftentimes. This, we believe, you know, white people look at us, you know, slant eye, you know, with askance. We do the same thing. When we look at each other, we don't see the value of one another. And so,
because and how we treat each other.
And how we treat each other. And that's what happens is we are unable to do business with one another. The white man's ice is colder. The white man's water is colder, is better. Because of that, because we feel
better
about ourselves.
I mean, the disparity study shows that.
Right.
And even if you look at African-American businessmen and women who, when they have an opportunity, mm-hmm. you have several major African-American business people who use white women DBEs instead of black DBEs.
And so getting back to this study, I think mm-hmm. that's part of the reason why, mm-hmm. even if you are a wealthy black family mm-hmm. or you come from a wealthy black business, over time people see you as not as valuable and don't mm-hmm. do business with you. When we don't view the services that we provide as valuable, when we don't view the services that we bring to the table as worth our money, then we don't spend it. And because of that, we have a downward economic trend in America.
Then let's talk about this study, because I think every elected official, like they ought to be a student of the Peter Dangerfield's study on poverty in New Orleans. Every elected official, every business leader, every African-American intellect ought to understand. This is a very powerful piece that explains mm-hmm. that no matter where you are socially or economically, mm-hmm. you're no different. If you're a black man, you're no different. Why isn't there a greater effort? You know, we had to pluck this out mm-hmm. of the newswire.
Sure.
Because we thought it was important to deal
That's correct.
We're not going to see a resolution at the city council dealing with it.
No.
We're not going to have probably the Black Caucus or the governor talk about it. As a matter of fact, whether you like it or not, it seems like the most powerful voice on disadvantages for black people in comment has been Mayor Landrieu, his comments that it's major irony.
Sure.
You know, he's the one who says, not a black elected official, he's the one who says it's obvious that it's not a level playing field.
Sure. Absolutely. He's been consistent about that, and kudos to him for that. But also, what's real, though, is we do see it, Oliver. We see mm-hmm. it every day. Let me tell you how. We see it in policies. We see it and unfortunately, the mayor's words and his policies don't line up in this regard. I mean, he spent $41 million on cameras. Mm-hmm. Now, that may be important to have cameras, but there's no, I mean, and I'll give another example. The state, we just pushed out a bunch of people out of prisons, but there are no support services.
There's no real reentry.
Exactly right. And the same with the city. If we invest in giving people jobs, if we invest in life skills training for people, if we invest it as heavily in those kinds of things that we do in cameras and police, then we will see a change, but that's part of the problem. Our investment is in punitive measures.
The rhetoric
does not support.
That's a good point, because probably the best reentry program in the city is the First 72.
Yes.
With a businessman, Blair Bucci, and Pastor Smith.
Yes.
But they got one room, two rooms.
They're funding it themselves.
And no funding.
That's right. They're funding it themselves. You know, what was that? Give NOLA Day last year. I gave some money, and I encourage other people. You know, too often, you know, people in New Orleans say things that they want to support. They want to do things. Well, this is something that you can do. You can give money to the First 72, and you can know that we have black men who are coming back, and they're coming back in droves now.
They're coming back anyway.
Listen, yeah, exactly right. I mean, we are the mass incarceration capital. Right. We're also the mass reentry capital. I mean, people don't go forever.
So we can finish up on this topic.
Yes.
We have this information. Mm-hmm. What can we do from a public policy position or continuing this conversation? I'm afraid that, you know, once we stop talking about this topic,
it's going to die.
It's going to go away.
Yeah. Well, I did see it on NPR last night, so it is getting some national traction. I'm hoping that, but, you know, all politics are local, all solutions are local, and I think locally with our new mayor and our new city council can do is pull back some of that money on punitive measures and invest it in our community.
Wouldn't that be major irony, though?
Well, let me tell you what we can do, Oliver. Okay. And this is a great segue into our next section. It's going to cost money, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to cost a lot of money to develop life skills training. I mean, listen, I hire black men on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, there are some hard. There are some guys who are hard to deal with. There are some guys who bring all kinds of issues to the table. Right. They don't. Some guys who just don't have any life skills training. Mm-hmm. They don't know you're supposed to come to work on time. They don't know if you have to be off, you're supposed to call. You know, they don't know if you got to go to lunch and you got to
need an extra 30 minutes. Hey, bro, I couldn't come today.
Right. Yesterday. I'm sorry about yesterday, bro.
I couldn't make it.
Today. Why are you here today? Because I thought you quit, you know? So, I mean, that's what I say. But I'm saying that, you know, our people, I mean, we've never had this in our community. This is not something that, you know, we lost along the way. So we need to invest in life skills training. We need to invest in jobs training. Now, where can we get the money? It's going to cost a lot of money.
Well, where can we get the money to start reinvesting in training people? Life skills and training and all those things were trendy back in the 90s. A lot of the funding has dried up. Matter of fact, funding for organizations that actually deal with social ills has dried up. Mm-hmm. Philanthropists and have targeted other issues right now. How do we get the funding in the
Let me tell you something. There's $1 billion in my estimation, at least $500 million of state money sitting on the table. There's in the city of New Orleans $100 million that we can get right now. The new city council and the new mayor can pull this money out. It's not fake money. It's not, you know, pie in the sky. This is real money that we should be getting.
Where is it?
It is from Harrah's Casino.
Who?
Harrah's Casino.
Talking about the state casino?
I'm talking
that's
about
in the city the that leases that property from us?
Oh, that very same one.
That where we actually control the site?
Yeah, correct. Absolutely positive.
But we don't act like it.
Let me tell you something. Right now, you know, working its way, and I encourage people to go to Think 504. I mean, it came out in the newsletter this morning talking about Harrah's should pay to play. And I encourage people to go to think504.com. Mm-hmm. There is an article which goes through this extensively. But we're going to talk about it and talk about it in some detail. You know, we're going to break. Oh, I didn't realize.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, sometimes the music just creeps up on you.
You know, I wasn't paying attention over there. But listen, when we come back, we're going to talk about Harrah's and how we can get money to do the kinds of things we can do in this community to make New Orleans a great place.
We're going to talk about that first. We can talk about the Black Free Press censorship in the media, legislature.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm taking your job.
So there's a whole lot of issues you don't want to miss out. With Mr. Jeff Thomas and Mr. Think 504, we'll be back after the break.
All right.
You're listening to WBOK, New Orleans.
You're listening to The Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
We're back. Welcome back to The Good Morning Show, Oliver O.T. Thomas. The early bird in the entire WBOK listening audience, man, I want to get a chance right now to announce a family affair, man. Minister Minor Rogers, March 30th, 2018. It's Family Fest, a community health fair at 3631 Washington Avenue. Unity, peace, and prayer. Minister Minor Rogers, man, you want to come out and participate. It's Family Fest, 11 a.m., community health fair, March 30th, 2018 at 3631 Washington Avenue. You don't want to miss that great event at the end of the month. We got a bunch of topics, man. We're going to finish up with Harrah's, but a couple of the other issues we talked censorship in the Black press. We've touched on it in the past. Some people, they didn't talk about it here, but when Byron Allen sued Comcast, sued President Obama, when that piece was done, man, when much about press and opportunity was tied to the Civil Rights Act.
Right.
In how black press and black journalism are excluded economically from advertisers. A lot of these major communication deals that go on, our community is pretty much left out.
Right.
We see it here with WBOK, the Tribune, the Weekly, Data News.
Think 504.
Think 504. Right. And black press is pretty much, we talk about economically, locked out.
Right, right.
Major problem in this country and in this city.
Right. Well, yeah, I remember most vividly Tom joined the morning show. I guess we compete with him. But, I mean, I remember when CompUSA was right before it folded, a couple of years before it folded, had this massive, almost $600 million ad buy around the country. Didn't spend $1 with the black media.
Tom Jarner highlighted that.
Tom Jarner called them out, and all of a sudden they started spending money with them.
Right.
And again, that goes back to not seeing value in black people, not seeing value in black businesses, and so white people have that issue.
Taking us for granted, people. we're gonna buy that ice anyway,
sure.
So they don't need to advertise.
Sure, sure. And so a big part of the problem, though, is that in order for the press to be free, mm-hmm. in order for the press to be able to do its job, advertising is what supports it. You know, back in the day before, mm-hmm. when you and I were kids, before cable, you turned on the TV, it was free. But it wasn't. I mean, it was because of advertising, right? And advertising dollars supports media. And unfortunately, because black media is viewed as less valuable, we get less advertising dollars.
But now, go ahead.
But what's important to understand is that there needs to be a symbiotic relationship, I think, between businesses mm-hmm. and the media. And businesses need the media to get their information out. And particularly in a town like the city of New Orleans, which is a small economy, which is a small market, when there's a big player, Entergy, in town, they need to treat people fairly. Part of the issue is that big business also needs to manipulate the press oftentimes, and big business. But what we need in New Orleans, as black press, is free and unbiased and uncensored abilities to do our jobs. And what happened when, and I'm just going to put it out there because, you know, I'm a straight mm-hmm. shooter. I bring it real to the table. When Entergy canceled that check to WBOK, mm-hmm. it was, in my mind, a form of censorship. They didn't like what they were saying. And I feel bad because I was on talking about Entergy, and I was on your show, and we talked about the fact that Entergy was, you know, doing what they were doing. And I'm not saying that I'm responsible. I don't mean that. But I think that I may have contributed something. But the point is
that... Well, you were doing your job as a journalist.
Correct. Thank you. The point is that what I was doing was bringing the voice of the people. People come to me and call me and email me all the time and tell me things.
The voice of who?
The people.
Citizens
of the city of New Orleans.
Where
are they?
We
only need them to pay their bills.
Where do they live at?
Pay their bills, pay your bill, pay extra $5 a month, and be quiet. I mean, that basically has been Entergy's stance on this thing.
But the other piece about this is, and it's gained national attention now, is that you're saying is that it's really bigger than WBOK and Entergy.
Correct.
It's a dangerous precedent being set when you talk about censorship, especially when you talk about the voiceless or people who socially, economically have been outcast mm-hmm. for years. That's a dangerous precedent to set.
Right. I mean, you see it right now with the war between New York Times and Donald Trump, for example. The good news is that the New York Times has enough wherewithal financially to be able to withstand the Twitter storms that Donald Trump threw at them early on. But the fact is that it is important. It's the third leg of government. It is the press is what keeps people informed. The press is what keeps people knowledgeable about what's happening. Because otherwise, you know, people have agendas. And for example, this Harris play. Harris has an agenda to get their contract renewed without having to put it out to bid, without being subject to putting up big money. Entergy wanted their power plant. It's a major asset for them. It's a way for them to make money going forward for the next 30 years. And if people were up in arms, if people were fully informed, maybe they would have voted against it. Maybe the city council may have been more informed. But so it's important that all points of view mm-hmm. get put out there. But
this seems to be one where there was a lot of opposition. We saw white, black. We saw mm-hmm. the people in New Orleans.
The
Vietnamese community.
Right.
It was an easy one when you talk about the opposition. It was an easy one to talk about in terms of the issues. I was quoted as talking about inclusion for African-American men and women in businesses and local business. I was quoted for talking about environmental concerns or renewable energy.
Right.
But you're saying that when you talk about censorship, when you talk about power, even if you're raising the right issues, mm-hmm. Businesses and major political entities now don't even want to hear about stuff that matters.
That's correct. They want their agenda. They want to push their agenda through. And that's fine, and that's okay. That's what they're supposed to do. They're businesses. Right. But I'm saying that what the city council should have gotten for the citizens is if they're going to give it away, let's get some jobs and let's get some contracts. Put that information out there. But Entergy wants to control those jobs and contracts to their discretion. So they don't want to have any public responsibility, in my opinion.
Well, let me ask you this, Jeff Thomas. Mm-hmm. Then who's looking out for the interests of the little guy? Who's
That's the role of the black press. That's the role of what we do. That's the role of WBOK.
Who protects people?
That's what WBOK does. Okay. That's what Think 504 does. That's what the Louisiana Weekly does. That's what the New Orleans Tribune does. That's what all the others, Data News, does. I mean, the fact is that if it were not out for our voices, our points of view wouldn't be out there. Listen, the Advocate and the Times-Picayune do a great job at doing what they do. But their views are skewed. Their views are geared towards a different audience oftentimes. And their views disregard the impact and the importance of what's important in our communities often. And so without our voices, our points of view won't be out there. And so people won't know, for example, that, you know, the monuments. I'll give a good example of the mayor. In fact, something Jarvis DeBerry wrote in Times-Picayune just recently I thought was really poignant and important and kind of elucidates this point. It illustrates this point. And that is that, you know, the mayor was tone deaf to the fact that Confederate monuments were offensive to black people. Right. Now, they've been offensive to black people for hundreds of years. And we've been fighting that fight for a long time.
Let me use Council Vice President Stacey Head's comments. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about whether there should have been accountability, this is her statement I'm reading.
Okay.
She says, we as a council did not demand that Entergy explore and analyze all viable solutions to the reliability problem.
Right.
More cost-effective and environmentally friendly options that are now being discussed in the public realm, mm-hmm. like combination of transmission upgrades, demand-side management, renewable batteries, distributed generation, or other components of technologies, were never thoroughly considered by Entergy or the city's advisors.
Right.
That's a heavy statement.
Absolutely. Listen, this is.
Yet it still passed.
Yeah, this is the thing that gets me. This is our power plant. We just hired Entergy to run it. They're just an operator for us. And so the fact is, we could, and we've given them a monopoly. Maybe we could open this thing up. Maybe we could have some competition. I mean, maybe one other company or two other companies could come in. The transmission lines are ours. And the plants that are being built are ours. Entergy gets to own it and make the profit off of it. But, you know, we could change that. They could share that plant with
other
providers.
So you're saying those issues, whether it's renewable energy, more viable options, the concern about African American men and women and local involvement, the environmental impact on a particular neighborhood. We're saying that those things are important, correct?
And I'm saying that they wouldn't be, that information wouldn't be out there were it not for you, the black press, and that kind of stuff. I know we got some callers.
Lines are lit up. To our callers, the lines are lit up. Line one, you're on with Jeff Thomas, OT, and Early Bird.
Good morning,
Brother
Shedrick. I can't understand why the three black P's are allowing folks to censor us, economically, to censor us, our way of living, to censor what you all are saying. And the three black P's are black people, black preachers, and black politicians. Mm-hmm. And this CEO of Entergy is no different from Mitch Landrieu. Mitch Landrieu, okay, you took down the Confederate monuments as I close, but yet the billions of dollars that came here from FEMA, which Mayor Nagin had something to do with, but we hate Mayor Nagin because their ice is colder than ours, but you took the statues down, but you didn't bring none of them billions here.
Thank you.
Black businesses, to WBOK, to Think 504, or to our black communities. But yet this money from FEMA is funding gentrification, which is excluding black people. Y'all have a good one.
Thank you. Is it easy to punish your own? Is it just another sign of kind of like, Willie Lynch, right? So, well, you know, they have no power. They have no voice. They're a tiny station. They're a tiny press. You know, they need my money. They say something I don't like. We cut them off.
Listen, if you see something as valueless or having very little value,
you kill it.
You kill it.
Wow, we'll go back to the lines. Line two by Brother Al. You're on with Jeff Thomas, OT and Early Bird.
I want to thank Jeff for what he does, Oliver for what you do, and thank you for the Family Affair thing. It's going to be big. But let me say this.
Yeah.
I am peed off to the piers with Jason Williams. I'm talking about the A&B. They in my neighborhood. They buying blocks of... People can't. My neighbors are. I look at their license plate to find out who they are, where they're coming from. They're coming from all over the country to stay in my neighborhood. And I'm a homeowner, my neighborhood. And he's going to talk about they want to see what's going on. How you going to want to be caring about us? And I thank God for WBOK. How you going to be caring about us the way you voted last week? And Jason, we not stupid. And look, I know you want to run for district attorney coming. And guess what? I'm like an elephant. I ain't gonna forget. Have a great day, my brother.
Thank you, thank you.
Jason
Williams is probably one of the best criminal defense attorneys in this country.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's a better criminal mind.
Sure.
Probably one of the smarter young men that I met. But but on this issue, there's still a lot more to be explained in terms of the mindset of why and how it happened. People are looking for more answers.
Yeah. Well, you know, listen. I don't know. I don't want to say he's bought and sold, but I certainly am not saying that. But it makes you wonder. Let me tell you. Part of what's happening, we really need to get on this Harris piece because we only have a few minutes left, but and this may be a good segue. Part of Harris has been lobbying the state legislators.
For quite some time.
And Entergy lobbied the city council for quite some
time. That deal started 2 years ago. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly right. So
and the people lobbied when they found out about
exactly
it.
Exactly
people protested
exactly
when they found
out. Exactly right.
deals already?
Done.
We go to line three.
Sure.
Kevin, you're on with OT, Jeff Thomas and Early Bird.
Hey, I just want to thank both of you guys for what you do.
Thank you, man.
And the callers, quite frankly.
Yes.
One of the guys talked about the three P's and he put them in perfect order.
Mm-hmm.
We got a problem with the people in this city. And I'm talking about everybody. Okay? Now, the problem is that we have contempt for each other. Listen, we don't even know our neighbors. Okay? And we're afraid of our neighbors. Okay? And we want leadership in the community on an ongoing basis to deal with all these issues. We're dealing with people who have money and power. Basically, they're bullies. And this is not, they didn't just come on the block today. They've been here for the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
That's right.
And black folks know it better than anybody else. And we had leadership at one time. It's just like we don't have a farm here that we used to live. Where are the people first, and with a capital B, the preachers, and the power? Well, we know where the preachers are. Nobody takes care of you like you. The big P is, where are the people?
Oh, you're right.
Great question, Kevin. Thank you so much.
I'm going to call upon the people to act in this Harris thing.
Yeah.
I mean, if the people let their voices be heard, I mean, call your state representative, call your state senator, call the governor's office. Let them know that we demand that this contract be put out to bid.
Harris makes 250 to 300 million.
300 million
a year.
Profit. Cash money in their pocket.
I think it's one of the largest grossing land-based casinos in the world. If not, it was number one in their
Let me tell you. Let's talk about it. You know, casino gambling, it used to be you had to go to Las Vegas.
Right.
Then you could go to Vegas and you go to
Atlantic City.
But now casino gambling is everywhere.
You can go
just
next
about
door
every
now.
State has casino
right.
gambling.
Right.
Just about every state. And so because of that, you know, revenues are down across the board. I mean, you got lotteries, you got all kinds of other activities and entertainment that people go to. But the New Orleans land-based casino has been one that has been consistent. It has always made
especially
money.
Because it's a tourist destination.
Some have gone out of business. In Detroit, they shut their doors.
That's
in Atlantic City, they closed them down. Trump went bankrupt in Atlantic
That's
City
right.
casinos. And so, but here in New Orleans, our little casino in the old Rivergate Convention Center has been chugging along,
doing well.
Making money every year, $300 million. But let me tell you, there's been a transformation in the casino business. Casinos make less and less money on gaming.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, But where they're making their money now is destinations. And so now they have spas. They have all of these
hotels.
They have hotels. They have venues. They have restaurants. And so with this new, two things are happening right here. First of all, they want to renew that contract without a bid. Now, you know, in 1994, they spent $155 million for the right to have the sole land base. Yeah, they bid it out. Exactly. You remember that?
If you can put up $150 million to get it,
right,
surely you could put up that to keep it.
Well, let me tell you, $150 million in 1994 money.
How much is that? That's
at least $500 million today, right now. Now, I say this to you. I say if you got a business that is going to get a 30-year contract, because that's what this is, a 30-year contract to have that. Again, that is our asset, that Rivergate, because that is our business. That's our property. The city owns it. It's for us. And so we're leasing it out to an operator. You can make some money, and then there's a calculation based upon how much profit they make and how much they pay the state in the city, right? And so, but now what's happened is, over time, the casino business has changed. If you remember, they didn't want to have hotels. Mm-hmm. Now they got a hotel. They have one. Now they want two.
Right.
They couldn't have restaurants. But what's changed in the casino business is this. Gaming revenues are down, mm-hmm. but all of this destination-type revenue right. is up.
Especially in a city like New Orleans.
Well, no, I mean in Las Vegas, everywhere, okay. all around okay. the country. The casino business is changing. And so they're making much more of their money from non-gaming revenues, from selling tickets to shows, from having big-time restaurants.
The Las Vegas model.
From having spas. And so this is what we – let me just get
to that. Go ahead.
And so Harris has lobbied the legislature. They want to do two things. They want to transform the casino. They want to be able to put all of these things mm-hmm. into this casino because it's not there now. So, and it's forbidden now with the contract that they have. They can't have all these big venues.
Right.
They can't have all these restaurants. They can't have this other hotel. They can't have the things that casinos are making money on right now. So part of the bill is to allow them to do that. All right? And then the next thing is, they want to get a 30-year contract extension.
30 years.
So, and right now,
what are we getting?
We get nothing. So right now,
Support services reimbursement?
They promised us $100 million a year. That's what they said. I guarantee you give us this casino, we'll give you $100 million a year. Well, now it's $60 million a year. Well, you know, that $40 million, well, you know, we weren't making as much as we thought we were. You know, we thought we was going to have all these people, but we can only give you $60 million. So we get $40 million right. less, all right? And they base that upon, the calculation is based upon gaming revenue, mm-hmm. all right? And so now what they want to do in gaming revenue, even in our casino, is not as high as it's a great casino that we have, right. but gaming revenue has been flat. I mean, we go up a little bit every mm-hmm. year,
right.
you know, but it's not, you don't get 30% increases. And so what Harris is doing right now in the state legislature is saying we want to, so first let me back up. In 1994, they paid $155 million. Mm-hmm. Now, they don't want to pay nothing for a new 30-year contract. We just want the contract. Just sign on the dotted line. Now, if you put that out to public bid, if you open that up to public bid.
More money.
I'm telling you, the state we're on this fiscal cliff. It is shocking to me.
And who owns the rights to that location?
The state of Louisiana, the city of New Orleans owns the property.
It's the city property. It's our lease.
Yeah, it's our lease. Now, the right for them to have a gaming license comes from the state.
The right for them to use that location.
Comes from the city. Correct.
Well, sounds like the city's in a pretty good position.
The city's in a great position. But let's first talk about the state's position.
Okay.
The state's position, this is where the state can get $500 million to $1 billion. Mm-hmm. This contract, 30 years, needs to be rebid. All right? Mm-hmm. Harris might be the best player. They might be.
Listen, let them compete,
they've been
though.
Good. But let them compete. If they want all of these other amenities,
right.
if they want to be able to make all of this extra money, then they need to compete. Just like anybody else, let's put it out to open bid. We got a $600 million deficit in the state of Louisiana. We can kill it right now, this year. We can, if you put that thing out to bid, you'll get at least $500 million. You might get a cool billion
right.
if you get Beau Rivage and all these other
right.
big casino people trying to come in and bid on this property. So that's number one.
Then why are Representative Leger and Taylor Barrow, why are they so ready to lock this up without exploring?
You tell me. You tell me. That's what I'm saying, that we need to do this. And so I'm calling upon Joe Boy, who you said I heard earlier say mm-hmm. he's on it. I'm calling upon Jimmy Harris, who brought this legislation. I'm calling upon all of our local leaders to make Harris either rebid. I think we need to put it out to bid. But if they don't put it out to bid, they need to pay a premium for the right for this license. This ain't free.
Then let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
Because I remember Mark Morial being Jim Singleton and myself and others mm-hmm. being kicked out of the governor's mansion for it.
Uh-oh.
And that is demanding at least what we put up in terms of casino support services.
Exactly right.
Former Mayor Morial had calculated that in terms of city support, it was at a minimum of $24-25 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
And he was demanding, a deal had already been done, but he was mm-hmm. demanding and negotiating with the state mm-hmm. that at least we get something close to that in terms mm-hmm. of the legislation as a casino support services. Have we got a commitment there to at least match what the city puts up in terms of services?
Let me tell you, it's much worse than that, Oliver.
Oh, so
it's
the answer
much
is
worse
no.
than that. The answer is no. But let me tell you how egregious mm-hmm. this is. All right, so I told you the state gets $60 million a year, right?
Off the top.
Off the top. But that's not off the top. It's it's a calculation based upon gaming revenue. Now this new bill is going to let them make a lot more money, but we get none of that money.
None of that revenue.
None of that revenue. So
doesn't seem to make sense.
That makes
especially
no sense
in a cash-strapped broke state.
Exactly right. You see my frustration. You feel my pain here.
So why are the elected officials brokering please. And negotiating on Harris' behalf and not on the citizens' behalf?
Let me tell you something. When people lobbying, I don't know, you have been an elected. When people lobby, what happens? I've never been an elected official. What do these lobbyists do?
You get lobbied.
I want to get lobbied one day. Please, somebody lobby me. I'm available for lobbying anytime. That's what I'll say.
You get lobbied. Let's go to the lines right now. Line one, Reverend Calhoun, you're on with Jeff Thomas.
Good morning, gentlemen. Let me make it fast.
Go, Red.
Number one, wasn't some money supposed to go from Harris to the school systems here?
Yes.
A very important piece. When it was first brought here, they said it was money for education.
Right.
When it was first brought here.
The other point, what do our legislators stand on this package? Are they negotiating the best deal? And I'm talking to all of them now. Are they really negotiating the best deal for this city?
They better.
Well,
they better.
I mean, right
that's
now
you only have
two voices right now that are public. That is Speaker Taylor Barris mm-hmm. and Representative Walt Legere. I have not heard mm-hmm. from anyone else, or definitely no prominent African American leader in the state. No one has weighed in at all.
None.
Not publicly, anyway.
That don't sound good.
Well, it's a terrible. That's why we're on right now, Rev. I mean, you know, we need our legislators to step up. They stepped up
in
the special session.
Well,
let me tell you, let's give them some kudos. They they stepped up in the special session and killed it.
Yes, they did.
Because, you know, they were trying to put these regressive taxes on our backs.
Yes.
Kudos. But now we need to listen. We need Harris needs to pony up. They're making $300 million a year. If they don't want to write another check for $500 million, okay, fine. Well, let's put it out to public bid. Okay, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's only 50
again,
million.
I'm trying to figure out those that we have elected to represent mm-hmm. us, are they truly representing us? Well. Are they actually getting here and saying, I mean, as knowledgeable as Jeff is about this, somebody that we elected should be on that same level to be saying to Harris, this is what New Orleans needs.
Well, right now the
and
score is 5-1.
Right. Oh, look, don't get me started. On
right
cameras,
now
right.
The score is 5-1, and whoever reached 7 can call game. But it's right now the score is politicians, capitalists 5, people 1.
All right.
That's
gentlemen.
The score.
Y'all go ahead.
Thank
also
you. Thank you. That's a heavy score to make up, man. Fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Politicians, capitalists 5.
Davis.
People won.
We need Anthony Davis to come through and take over the game. Let
seven
me tell
call
you, we
game.
We need a big time player to step up now. And listen, we haven't even talked about what's going to happen in the city of New Orleans because listen, the city of New Orleans is also in a prime position. Listen, Harris wants this. They want another contract.
Control the lease.
They want another lease. They want another 30-year lease. Well, it costs money. You don't get it for free. Can you go sign a lease to get some property that you're going to make guaranteed money on? And get it free?
No.
Huh?
No.
You can't, right?
Not without renegotiating.
Now, it's got to be renegotiated, doesn't it? Absolutely, positively. Listen, the city of New Orleans is sitting in a catbird seat. Let me tell you what we need to do in my estimation. All of this money that, you know, we've had Mayor Landrieu's approach, which is a punitive approach, which is to extract as much money out of the citizenry as it can through cameras and fines and
fees.
But
that money comes from us.
Right. That money comes from us. Right. Yeah. And also this new traffic, these crime cameras all around town. I'm saying that this is a way that we can invest in our people. We got Harris our people go in that casino and spend money. And so I'm saying, and we give support services. You know, somebody they're driving up and down our streets and they're doing all kinds of things. It's our tax dollars that are at work here, and we need to have the benefit of it.
Jeff Thomas, let me ask you this,
yes,
man.
Sir.
And you're right about this as an academic, a journalist, a writer.
Yes,
do the people have a chance, especially when you talk about these big companies, these big deals, these big negotiations, does it really matter what the people want, need, or think?
I kid about lobbying, but let me tell you the other side of that coin. Sure, they're lobbyists. Mm-hmm. There's also the public. This is where we have fallen short in the state of Louisiana, in my estimation. The public is not engaged. All it takes now, you can just email. You don't even have to lead. Mm-hmm. It used to have to be back in the day, in my day, in your day, when you wanted to impact the legislature, you would have to get in your car, drive to Baton Rouge, and knock on the doors in their office doors and try to catch them in the hallways and say, hey, representative, let me talk to you. Let me holler at you.
Right.
Now you can send an email. And this, if anybody has you can email the Senate, in the House of Representatives of the state of Louisiana, you get the email address of every representative. You get the email address of every senator. Mm-hmm. You can spend 15 minutes emailing just the new, and it's listed by parish. So if you don't even know your own, just email everybody in New Orleans.
I'm going to ask you a comment. I opened up earlier. There are major business interests in city now. Folks are lobbying. You know, political climate is changed. And
yes,
one major corporate CEO says, When we go to town, we will do what's required.
Exactly right.
If it's required that we do what's right, if it's required that we hire your people, if it's required that we do business with locals, if it's required that we use Ameris, but if it's not, we do business the way we do business.
Right. Listen, like I said, when Entergy was doing their thing and now that Harris is doing it, I'm not mad at them for trying to get the best deal for themselves. I'll try to get the best deal for my business every single solitary day.
Who's representing us?
But exactly right. We need our state, our elected officials to step up. And the way they're going to step up is if you email them or you take a time and you call them. And you're not going to get them on the phone, but they got a staff and you tell the staff, write this down. A Harris should have to pay to have this new contract. Make Harris pay. Make Harris play the pay. They're gaming the system right now. Listen, they're good at it.
Is the will of the people, are their interest? And let me say, I understand leadership. Sometimes, great leaders take people where they need to be, not where they want to be.
Right.
All right.
Right.
But, I mean, are we just in an age where the people really don't matter, whether it's environmental protection, whether it's economic inclusion, whether it's someone advocating? Are we just at an age right now where political and business leaders see no value in siding with citizens?
Well, citizens are so – yeah, let me tell you what happens. I think this is what people have done. People have relinquished their right to leadership.
So there's some responsibility that has to go to other people.
People say, I voted for you, man. Look, I expected you to do this. You came and you told me you're going to do this. But everybody knows politicians are politicians. They're going to tell you what you want to hear so that you can vote for them. It's up to us to keep them on point. It's up to us to hold them to task. It's up to us to make them know what we think about these particular issues. And that's all you have to do is an email. Man, this is 2018. It's so easy now to be engaged. All you have to do is email.
Jeff Thomas, thank you. Your concerns about free press and censorship is important. It's a bigger issue than just what happens to us.
Yes.
And also, right now you're saying that Harris is at a point now where the voices of the people should be included in these negotiations.
Now is the time, citizens. Now is the time. They are negotiating this right now in the House of Representatives. Call your state reps. Call your state senators. Email them. All you have to do, you don't even have to call them. I'm sorry. Email them. You just get on your phone and Google state House of Representatives, State of Louisiana. And you'll get every email address of everybody listed by parish. And if you don't know who your representative is, you can there are only six of them in the city of New Orleans. Email all six of them. Email the three senators who represent parts of Orleans Parish. That's all you have to
go out and vote this weekend.
Oh, let me tell you, yeah, we didn't get a chance to talk about that. I think it's going to be an exciting day tomorrow.
Yeah,
it's going to be, yeah, everybody
Saturday.
Should go out to vote Saturday.
Yeah, go out
right?
and vote this
I'm
weekend.
Normally here on Friday. Lee threw me off being
right.
here on the Thursday.
Right.
Yeah, right.
right.
He called me last night and said, you're going to be on tomorrow, right? You paid me to be on here Friday. You know, I get extra money for being on the Thursdays. I triple my payment.
Well, first of all, we want to thank all of our guests today, Gina Marie. We want to thank you, Jeff. We appreciate what you're doing and
thank
making
you.
Us.
Thanks
think,
for having me here. Thank you. Thank you
think.
So much.
Very important issues. He's just.
I was.
He's only serious.
I'm only serious.
Very important.
I want double my pay.
what happens with free press is important in terms of accountability.
Right.
When you're at this point, very important point, to be able to negotiate with one of the top
yes.
business entities in the world.
Yes.
It's not that you're trying to extract anything from them. What you're trying to do is negotiate and get as much as we can for the people. We live in a poor state. We live in a state where we're saying we have a $994 million a gap. We live in a city. Where if you look at the disparity study in Brookings and Census's Pew,
yes.
That says that people here are struggling. So
yes.
it's an opportunity
yes.
to maybe get Harris
to do the right thing.
To
pay the play.
What do the CEO says? We're going to do what's required.
Yeah, exactly.
If it's required that you help business.
That's right.
If it's required that you help people. If
right.
it's required that you help African-American men and women.
Right.
If it's required that you help local white businesses.
Right.
They're going to do what's
required. Exactly.
This is OT. You promise to come back?
Every time you have me.
How can people get in touch with you?
People email me at jeff@think504. Just go to think504.com. There's a contact us page button on the page.
This is OT and Earl Bird. Everybody have a wonderful day. Let me say this. When you operate in the spirit of our brothers and sisters here, man, that's an energy that can go a long way. And when I say let there be peace on earth and let it begin with us, when we operate in peace, then we generate an energy that's peace. And when
absolutely.
We generate an energy that's peace, then we'll have a chance to be what? More peaceful.
Peaceful. Yes, sir.
God bless everybody. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, OT.